Good morning.
Good morning, CK and James. I realized, if you look at yourself and your image there, you finally arrived at the condition of the blank slate. I just have that pure blank background.
The background.
There. Yeah.
It's as pure as my soul.
Yes, the tabula rasa of emptiness.
I always like that phrase, tabula rasa. And
yeah.
If there isn't a Christian metal or a Christian punk band with that name, there should be.
Oh, yeah.
It's somehow Christian. I don't know.
You know me. I'm not big on the Christian music scene.
You're missing out.
No, I'm not. I've heard a lot of it through you. That reinforced my
there's some good feeling. Stuff, but it's rare. This is episode 227, now I'm gonna feel like my age. You remember that show 227? I think Marla Gibbs was in it. It's like Black Family kind of sitcom during the kind of the golden age. No, there we go, 227. No.
I knew 222, room 222. That was the show. I was older.
What other numerical television shows can we remember?
Yes.
Hawaii 50.
That was good too.
Yeah. We should introduce ourselves. I'm Ash Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And good morning to Kathleen and Ellen.
James says, I remember 227 because, you're also, you're also kind of old. Beverly Hills 90210. And then there was the reboot or whatever. I don't know what this means, Ellen. Crash Dog and Metal Truck.
Those sound like good Christian rock bands.
Fuck one Adam 12. Yeah. So anyways. We're not talking about old television series with numbers in them. We're talking about smashing the patriarchy within Christian spirituality. Yeah. And it's Fascism Friday.
Yes.
This is the perfect storm. Religion, patriarchy, fascism.
It's all the things.
It's a nice shit salad.
Mm. Yeah. And before we started, we were considering playing you a video, which we're not going to do because it just created so much pain, just even previewing it, that we decided we couldn't do it.
Anybody wants to see it, I can send them a link to message me directly. But it's just to frame it, John Piper has always, he's retired, but he keeps circling back in. And it's and this is something we just feel like we need to remind people. Within Christianity, John Piper is far from fringe. Yeah. He's as mainstream as you get, in a way. I mean, best-selling author. Large church in downtown Minneapolis, hugely influential within that sort of reformed conservative scene. He's considered an elder statesman, reasonable, thoughtful, even moderate in some ways.
Yeah.
And the video we thought about sharing is someone asking like, hey, how do women submit properly as unto the Lord in situations of abuse? And he said, women have to stay under the headship of the man, but out of worship for Jesus. And basically, if he's just verbally abusive, you got to deal with that and be a good witness. And if he just kind of slaps you, as long as your life isn't in danger, you kind of just say, kind of endure it a little bit and then go to the church. Now, the context of the church, though, is I've known women who've gone to the elders of that church for different situations. And they it's never been liberatory. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. So this is
and to show how even more mainstream this is, Right, because Susan, you know, has this comment, John Piper, what a whack job. So I went to San Francisco Theological Seminary, which is a PCUSA seminary, so the liberal Presbyterians, right? Not like the Cumberland Presbyterians or the Orthodox Presbyterians who, you know, are considered the whack jobs. And it's supposed to be liberal within the liberal denomination. Mm-hmm. And I was in a class, and I can't remember if it was a pastoral care class or if it was some sort of, it may have been like one of our little practicum courses. And we had one of these, you know, pastors coming in, one of these guest speaker types, again, liberal person, considered liberal pastor, who said, well, you will have parishioners who will be sitting in the front row of your church, and you will know that the husband is beating his wife, and you can't really talk about that or do anything about that. And you have to figure out how to give, you know, pastoral care to this family. And, you know, as a psychologist, I was beyond horrified to hear this, because first of all, that's actually illegal.
Yeah, there's
you have
there's
a duty
ethical thing, yeah. Yeah.
And second of all, the notion that somehow this was appropriate to not address with this family, or just to kind of say we're going to pretend that this is okay, is completely abhorrent to me. And so when we want to emphasize how mainstream this is, and this circles all the way back to what we were talking about on Monday, right? How the old guy in the sky, image of God, is one that even churches that think they are liberal and are not teaching that are teaching. And so, you know, this patriarchy and the theology around it and the practice and all of the stuff is so embedded in these institutions, that we really need to be very, very clear about calling that out. And the notion that, oh, this is just a fringe, wacko, evangelical, you know, weird country church somewhere. No. That's not true at all.
No, and this, Dan and I say this all the time. We're friends. And if you're listening and you kind of generally like what we say, you're way more fringe by a lot than John Piper in terms of the center of gravity of Christianity. And we have to be real about that.
Yeah.
And one of the questions that's come up now the past few times, like, well, can you do this Christianity thing? Mm-hmm. And be anti-patriarchy. Mm-hmm. And I don't want us to act as though the answer is obvious. Like, well, sure. Because what does that even mean to be anti-patriarchy? Like, I'm going to get a little bit step on toes, but I have tons of minister friends and people who go to churches who they complain all the time about how shitty their denomination or church is, but they're still there. And they think their active resistance is complaining about it. Yet they still give money and they still participate in these institutions. So are they anti-patriarchy or not?
Right. Yeah. And let's run through some of these comments. But
then, they're coming in here.
They're coming in.
Oh, wow. Got to start with this one. Dan gets the Christian punk scene after all.
Well, thanks, Alan. I don't think that's true in the least. But thank you for guess that those were names.
Attention to pain. Yeah.
You're welcome. It started actually with attention to my own pain. Like, I couldn't sit through the video. So, yeah.
Whack job. Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah, this is the sentiment is clear here. this is interesting. Yeah. James writes, my wife wrote a paper on that Piper video clip in seminary. Yeah. Susan writes, I was acquainted with the Reformed Church here in town. Extreme funny beliefs and practices at a frightening level. John Piper was one of their gurus. You know, full disclosure, I was into John Piper for a while back in my 20s.
Yeah.
If your primary interest is trying to treat the Bible as a source of authority that you need to submit to, and you want to be the best at submitting to the authority of Scripture, John Piper's great for that because he demystifies it all and gives it very clear how to be obedient, which I'm too anarchist for that to have stuck. So, and to me, that's a really weird way of thinking about a relationship with God, as one primarily of mere obedience. Ellen writes, PSA, if anyone has been personally hurt by John Piper, you may enjoy his son's TikTok account, Abraham Piper, where he thoroughly goes over deconstructing his father's kind of harmful theology.
Yeah. I've heard about that.
CK writes, so at what point can people still call this shit Christianity? Well, that's the thing.
So this is a really interesting question. And I actually once got thoroughly castigated by someone for taking the position that this is not Christianity. What this person was really angry at me about was saying, well, you know, but there are all these institutions that say they're Christian and that therefore sort of represent Christianity. And so you have to, and I said, well, do you call the KKK Christian? He's like, yeah, you have to call them Christian too, right? And so he was taking this other point of view that basically anybody that self-identifies as Christian or is part of some kind of tradition that self-identifies as Christian, you have to admit that they're Christian. And, you know, to a certain extent, I understand that perspective, but personally, I don't agree with it. You know, and when you think about the story, particularly in the Bible, right, this isn't a new argument, right? So you think about the gospel story where, you know, Jesus specifically says, well, you can say, Lord, Lord, I'm following you. But I'm actually going to say, you're not following me and you're not my disciples. Just because you say so doesn't make it true, right? And so that's kind of my perspective on some of this is that, right, we can say anything we want. You know, I can say, I know how to fly, you know, and so do you have to call me a flying person, or do you have to call me somebody that's full of shit and lying, right? Like, so to me, the latter is more helpful than the former, right? And, you know, and even if I've got a whole room full of fake wings and, you know, I've been doing this for a long time and I learned it from somebody else that said they could fly and had fake wings, like, that doesn't mean you have to say I'm a person who flies, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the position that I take on this. I mean, I can say, oh, this has been part of the tradition that has called themselves Christian, right? That I would agree with. Mm-hmm. But is it Christian? Well, no, I don't think that it is. But that's a very challenging sort of distinction to make.
Well, and I tend to take the opposite thing, but I know this is all like, mm-hmm. there's linguistic and philosophical things that are kind of teasing at different things. For me, when some people say, well, that's not really Christian, what I think they're saying is that does not adhere to the teachings and life of Jesus Christ mm-hmm. as set and then as embodied by those who are committed to that way, the church. But like when you, to me, I look at Christianity as a sociological category. And if the vast majority of Christians have been kind of shitty,
right.
It's called Christianity. sense, I claim Christianity the same way I claim whiteness in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And for me, the big concern is this, and there's ways that you can, you know, I mean, I know Dan's looking at this at a different angle, but I know he agrees with this. Like part of the problem is when people say, well, that's not, those aren't real Christians. What often ends up happening is a way of absolving one of responsibility. So like slavery, well, those weren't real Christians. And if I were a time traveler, I'd go back and I would have been an abolitionist. And so now I can wash my hands. Like there's a little bit of that happens that I think we have to at least pay attention to somehow.
Oh, absolutely. And that's where, to me, you know, talking about the formational power of these institutions is so important. Because, right, like with whiteness, where I have to say, yeah, I have been formed by whiteness. And so I am white in that sense. To say, right, if you've been part of this tradition, you have been formed by it. And you can't opt out just because you think it's not true Christianity. That's absolutely vital to recognize. All right.
Ellen writes, Abraham Piper is also in the Twin Cities and has a sweet art gallery and a cool puzzle company.
Nice.
I didn't know about cool. The puzzle thing.
Cool puzzles are great.
James writes, I went to a child sexual assault training for faith-based groups a week ago, and the person doing the training works on the assumption that sex offenders are already in your church. Her stat was one in 10 men.
Well, yeah, and if you look at, you know, statistics of women who've been sexually assaulted, it's 1 in 3, which, also means it's got to be 1 in 3 men. So it's probably a lot higher than 1 in 10. Now she may be talking about, children, pedophiles, but only. But yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true.
Susan writes, thank God you and I saw the light, Ash, the ex Piper fan club.
Yes.
Cheryl writes, what if congregants bring up concerns they want to talk about? Naive? Like, I'm not sure the context for this at this point in the conversation.
Right. Yeah, I mean, are you talking about individually with the pastor? Or are you talking about in different groups? One of the things, and I was just on a conference call last night with a national clergy group about this and talking about the fact that, you know, one aspect of church life is that it's very dishonest. And this to me connects to these issues of patriarchy and racism, and that there is a baked in dishonesty in these systems. And so it's very hard for congregants to bring up concerns to talk about that are deeply honest and revealing. And oftentimes, and this gets to another thing we were speaking about before we got started, is that, and this is the power of these systems, right? Is that they punish individuals who try to transgress.
Yes.
And we've talked about this before in terms of capitalism, right? So the threat of capitalism, and we've seen this rear its head in terms of all of this pandemic support, economic support, which the capitalists hate, right? Is that, capitalism basically says, hey, look, if you don't toe the line and work shit jobs for shit wages, we're going to let you starve to death and we're going to let you go homeless. And we don't care. And everybody learns that and knows that, right? And so it's the same thing in these church systems. If you threaten the system too much, if you speak about these things too much, if you try to do things about this too much, the church will hurt you. And if you're a pastor, it'll hurt you. If you're a congregant, it'll hurt you. And there's all kinds of ways that that happens.
Yep. Bob writes, I know it's cliche, but sitting in a garage doesn't make you a car. Identifying as a goat doesn't make you a goat. I'm assuming you're going with the Christian thing. Yeah. And it raises the question, what does it mean to be? I mean, that's a big theological question.
Yeah. And one of the 20th century theological greats, Howard Thurman, you know, the way that he dealt with this, and he was looking at it not so much through the lens of patriarchy, but through the lens of racism. The way that he dealt with this is that he did make a distinction. And he said that there was the religion of Christianity, and then there was the religion of Jesus. And I think that that's an interesting, that was an interesting move. And basically, you know, he spent 50 years kind of talking about that and articulating what that meant. So, yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of different ways to kind of parse this out.
Catherine writes, there's a recent podcast. I've been seeing this shared a lot. That's an evangelical insider investigation of the rise and fall of Mars Hill. Mm-hmm. And it's really struck me that when they suggested that men like John Piper could have been mentors who kept Pastor Mark Driscoll's outrageous misogyny in check. In my opinion, that's missing the entire landscape of deep misogyny within Piper's theology and white evangelicalism in general. Yes, right. It's problematic when we start thinking of, in that context, John Piper would be considered soft patriarchy.
Yeah. Well, your point, Catherine, is so right on and really gets at this, the distinction between individuals and systems, right? So the notion that this one individual, right, could have made another individual less of a monster, which, you know, that's kind of the way we think all the time about stuff, really, as you said, misses the entire landscape of the deeper system of patriarchy and misogyny. And that's the thing, is that individuals don't ultimately, right, even, you know, Ash, even if they're the people that are staying in the church and complaining about it, but still giving money or taking money or whatever, you know, the system just keeps on keeping on in spite of what the individuals are doing.
Cheryl writes, teachers are supposed to call authorities if they suspect abuse. Clergy should too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's actually the law.
Yeah. Heather writes, if claiming it gives us privileged power, then claiming Christ is only branding. I feel like there's a lot to unpack there that I just, yeah. You know, I would love if you could say more. Yeah. And there is a lot of branding in it. Yeah. And identity stuff. And
if what you're saying is that if Christianity is power and privilege, then it's not about claiming Christ. It's just Jesus is just a brand, because Jesus is the opposite of privilege and power.
Well, right? and that gets at a lot of the big contradictions within Christianity as an expression in the world, which yeah. we have to contend yeah. with. Bob writes, ultimately, who does it matter to? Jesus didn't intend to make Christians. Again, big, yeah, there's so much theology in here. And like, I think I get what you're yeah. saying. And I don't know if I agree with, I think I agree with the sentiment. I'm not sure I agree with the phrasing, but.
Yeah, I mean, the language that Jesus used, which is very much the language of spiritual tradition and community all across of, and as we talked about with some comments that Don made a little while ago, we call it the Middle East and South Asia and the East because everything is in reference to Europe. But all across that landmass that we call Asia, you know, there's a tradition of teachers and disciples, and Jesus very clearly referenced that and was interested in having disciples and followers because, you know, that's what spiritual teachers who come out of that entire anthropological system do. So in that sense, he did intend to make Christians, but if we're referring now to Christians as a sociological institution, no, he was not really interested in that at all.
Neil writes, can we say we benefit from Christian hegemony the same way people of pallor? I've never heard that before. I like that. Benefit from white supremacy? I think we do. And a friend would say, no matter how much I say those aren't real Christians, am I doing enough to counter their narrative? That's, to me, the question is, and I'm going to jump to this other thing from Bob further down, just to tie them together, because I think this is an important thing to grapple with. Bob says, you say we've come up in these systems and been formed by them, and we can't opt out. Wouldn't it be better to say, because of that, we have to opt out? But most won't, because we have to pay the bills, so we say we're going to stay and fight the system from within, but the system generally eats its those perceived as heterodoxical. This is the question, like this opt out, this idea of how do you opt out? How do you counter the narrative? I can't opt out of whiteness exactly, but I do need to try to subvert, undermine it, and destroy it. Mm-hmm. And so to me, this is the thing is like, if opting out, like again, okay, I want to be very clear. If you feel, if Christianity has been abusive to you and been tarnishing your soul and you leave, I'm not gonna be like, you need to stick in the church. I hate those sorts of memes. Good luck finding something perfect. Like, I hate that. and also, like, if you, out of matter of conviction, convert to another religious tradition, follow the spirit. Like, that's fine. Yeah. But if you're somehow like, I like this Jesus stuff and I want to, I don't think, like, you could say, well, I don't call myself a Christian anymore, and that somehow gets us out of the free from the work. To me, the work is not, like, opting out seems too much like a binary turning of a switch. To me, it's like, how do we counter the narrative? How do we subvert the systems? How do we destroy Christian institutions of oppression?
Yeah.
Like, how do we fuck with that? Monkey wrench the shit out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and the way that you are talking about it, you know, and as you said, the opt in and opt out, it is this very binary, reductionistic sort of concept. And really,
maybe you might have more of a nuanced understanding of it, Bob, but that's how I'm hearing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the struggle that people have. I mean, it's not a criticism. I think that people struggle with that, you know, kind of, you know, a lot of what we talk about, and when we're coming from this spiritual formation and the formational perspective, a lot of what we're talking about is process, mm-hmm. right? So it's not something that you get to like, phew, I'm out, I made it, you know, because we're always, I mean, every time we talk to another person, every time we interact, every time we do anything within the world as it is structured, we are interacting with these forces, these process forces that are always at play, right? And, you know, it'd sort of be like saying, well, I can opt out of thermodynamics. It's like, no, you can't do that.
Have you tried?
I have tried. It's a very cold ending. Science joke there.
That was great. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. But you can be in process of doing different things. You can be in process of having different relationships, of forming different ways of seeing the world, of having different understandings. So all of that can be highly subversive from whatever position you're in, right? And so getting that sense of process, which in some ways is frustrating, right? Because I would like to opt out. I would like to opt out of whiteness. That would be great. So the process thing is a lot more frustrating, but I think it's a much better descriptive model of how reality functions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like we could do a whole series on this sort of thing, mm-hmm. for sure. Susan writes, women caught up in that belief system will be complicit in enforcing the legalism of the patriarchy, which is the saddest part of it all. Once you've escaped it, you feel so ashamed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to just triple underline this, because like I could see how someone would interpret like you can't be ever free from the stuff, falling too easily into this idea of like that you shouldn't cut off relationships or you need to stick with something. We're not saying that at all. Like, just like people like who, if they're had a very painful relationship with their family, like when people shame you to say that you have to be in relationship with your siblings, your parents, if something's abusive and diminishing you, it's okay to walk away.
Right.
And it's okay to leave these churches, and it's okay to say, I'm not going to stick around and try to fix this. It's not my burden. And it isn't.
Yeah, no.
If you're supposed to stick around with something, like, I don't think that should be the default assumption. Like, to me, it's a vocational question. This is as much in the inside of the church as I feel like I can get these days. And by no means am I an insider, but like a part of it is I engage the Christianity stuff. I don't think of myself as a reformer. I think of myself as trying to revolt and subvert. And it's part of my vocational stuff. If it wasn't, I don't feel like, why would I do this shit? it's not your burden, but you have to do this work. You have to find your own healing. And if your healing changes your relationship with other things and actually has a ripple effect in the church, that's great, but tend to the healing. This is interesting. James writes, that car garage statement goes back to Billy Sunday, who was a toxic masculinist evangelist. Woo. Yeah. See, again, that just shows how interwoven all this stuff is.
Right. Yeah.
Julia picked up soft patriarchy. There's not, I mean, hopefully you caught the irony of what I was saying there. Like, I don't think... The fact that there are worse kinds of patriarchy than Jen Piper is disgusting and horrible. So, yeah. Where are we at with the comments here? Wow, there's a lot. We're going to have to blaze through these. Holy cow.
We have to start blazing.
James writes, Jesus and John Wayne by Kristen Dumas examines the history of evangelical patriarchy and demonstrates in relationship to Fascist Friday that evangelical support for Trump wasn't an aberration, but totally on brand, for sure. Julia writes, if I am completely outside the power and privilege of Christianity, don't participate in any religion, do I still benefit, like white privilege? To the extent that you can be conversant, like, I mean, this is a big complicated question, but there's so many little cultural allusions and literary references and stuff within Christianity that's...
Well, no, but there's also a huge economic issue. Yes, absolutely, you still benefit. I mean, you know, Julia, you live in California, which is where I've lived a lot and grew up, and, you know, the entire mission project in California went hand in hand with the extermination of the native peoples and the development of California as a state, ultimately, and the sort of, you know, evacuating it of the human beings who had been there so that white folks could come and do their whole thing and the gold rush, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I mean, we do benefit because Christianity is not just a theological system or a going to church on Sunday system. It's an imperial system. Absolutely.
And this might be pushing the metaphor a little bit further than it could go, but I think that you could make the case that white supremacy is the Delta variant of Christian supremacy.
There we go.
I think that's largely true. Whiteness has basically became it's part of the civilizational construct of domination and oppression, and that there's a reason it did that. But really, white supremacy, we can't talk about white supremacy and whiteness and white privilege apart from some sort of Christian hegemony if people are increasingly less Christian. Yeah. It's a variant. I wish I had time to look this up or still enough of a Bible nerd to know this off the top of my head, but I've always thought of John 13:35 when dealing with so-called Christians. I guess we'll live in mystery.
I think of that too all the time, CK.
Susan writes, Michael Moore interviewed Chris Hedges on his Rumble podcast. They discussed the rise of the Christian right in relation to abortion issue and war. Very interesting for you to listen. We were going to talk about the abortion stuff in Texas that ties into this. We don't have time. Bob writes, subvert, undermine, destroy it. Strange that is ultimately our job as Christians. But I believe it is. The church needs to die. Ultimately, it is. The PCOC hasn't had a single year of growth since 1965. How do we come alongside and be a death doula for the church? Amen. Helping it die and leaning into the next new thing God is doing in the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we need to have a focus on that. Being death. I like the phrase death doula as a metaphor, because I know there are people who do that work. But what does it mean to be a death doula? What is... Yeah. good stuff coming out. Ellen writes, I like the distinguishing between Christendom, state religion versus quote unquote true Christianity. Look at the fruit, but I keep this distinction private. The stance is vulnerable to being called no true Scotsman. Yeah, and you're getting at a lot of the complexity that Dan and I have. Yeah. And Christians are known for crusades, Holocaust, smallpox blankets. Even those things were deeply unChristian. UFDA.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. For those who don't know, UFDA is like, oh my gosh, in Minnesotan speak. Lisa writes, I've spent 20 plus years trying to find a Christian landing place that aligns with my experience of being a follower of Christ, and it always falls short. As a woman pastor, I've been shut down before I can start, and I'm currently stepping back from it all and finding more spiritually at my corporate paying job. So I have no idea what to do for all that. You know, and that sucks. And I've been connected to you off and on for a while now, and I've seen this challenge with you, and I've had my own versions of it. And the sad thing is there's a lot of people like that, and there's tons of folks out there who mean well, who shame you for not landing and sticking with one thing as though the problem is you. And that sucks. So I'm sorry.
No, right now, I mean, this exodus from pastoral ministry, the exodus from the church, is just accelerating. And I think that that's a tremendous opportunity, because I think that, I think that what is happening is that that's putting people, all kinds of people, in positions to really reflect on, what to do next. To bail on these very toxic places that are very clearly not going to change. I think that that's the other thing, is that at some point it's very important to name, whether it's with an individual church or a whole denomination or whatever, to just say, no, this place is not going to change. So then what do I want to do with that? And a lot of people are like, I just want to leave, which is good.
Susan writes, I had opt out of the religious institution, Dan, for my sanity. I think Jesus is good, but he's not been distorted. But he's been distorted in many denominations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shamoon Ashik writes, God bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bob writes, the church has always been on the wrong side. Holy wars and crusades, manifest destiny, the doctrine of discovery, civil rights, women's rights, LGBTQ rights, climate, all the things. That's not to say God and the Spirit aren't living and active, but it's always taken place outside the church, always. Or when it's inside the church, it just gets co-opted real quick. The shelf life. I mean, you're saying some good stuff, Bob. And I'm feeling stirred to like talk about what does it mean to subvert the church in a bring death so that we might experience life kind of way. Julia writes, yes, makes perfect sense. Mission project is just like slavery. And yes, I benefited. Thank you, Dan. Amen, Bob. Neil writes, referencing Bob's comment, I've referred to sitting hospice with the current form of church. It's, again, this lots of resonance here. Cheryl writes, this is a big question too. I think this we need to do a series on this. Cheryl writes, subversion. Yeah. How do you do it? Talk? I mean, no disrespect. None taken. Like, we have to talk.
We're angry and ineffective.
Talk can be powerful, but we have to move beyond mere talk. And I think it's worth ironically talking about what does it look like to really subvert it.
We have a lot of great examples.
There are not enough examples, but
All right, we got to wrap up. Let's play this through.
You'll know they are my disciples by the love they have for one another. Yeah, there we go. Of course, I knew that verse, but I wanted you to say it. Bob writes, some of Jesus' harshest criticism was for the church and its leaders. That's right. Ellen writes, the point of interest about patriarchy plus Fashy Friday equals Margaret Atwood has said that the character of Serena Joy of The Handmaid's Tale is based on Phyllis Schlafly.
Nice.
Yeah, she's a fascinating figure. There was like a Hulu series about Phyllis Schlafly people can check out.
It's really pretty good.
Lisa writes, yep, not going to change. Amen. Julie writes, amen again, Bob. And then, Bob, please, I guess this is the last comment. Please do a series. It's going to be the focus of my sabbatical. Nothing says getting rest like figuring out how to smashy smash the church. That's the way to do it.
Great. Oh,
thanks, gentle people. This has been helpful to me. Yeah, this is.
Thank you, James.
We've got a lot of comments today. There's a lot of energy around this, and I'm feeling it. And I think we're going to tackle that next.
Continue next. But we will not be here on Monday because it's Labor Day. And so we'll be back next Wednesday.
Yeah, and maybe we'll have to do more than two on this. We'll figure something out. We're always willing to do stuff. Yeah.
Julia says, yes, House Subvert will be fabulous.
There we go.
We got it.
Okay.
Votes
we'll
are 2-0.
See you. See you next week, everybody.
Bye.